Hi, I'm Clemmy Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Sometimes you hear something that really makes you stop and think. Take the clothes on your back. Where did that fabric come from? It's not a trick question, but it's something I'm trying to be more mindful of. Our podcast partners, F&F Clothing, are working to reduce their environmental impact. They work with the BCI initiative, which helps to improve livelihoods in cotton-producing areas. Soon, all of F&F Clothing's 100% cotton garments will be completely BCI, something I can definitely get behind. And that's not it. You can now take your unwanted clothes to one of 87 Tesco stores to give them a second life with their take-back scheme. Thank you again, F&F Clothing. Hello and welcome to Honestly Podcast. I'm Clemmy Telford and I'm here to do one of my favourite things. No, not dreaming about one day getting 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep, having a properly frank open chat about tricky, sticky and often not spoken about subjects. Today I'm joined by two guests. One of them founded a blog that would become the basis of his career and eventually land him a job at Facebook and Instagram as a creative strategist turned product strategist. Mm-hmm. The other is an Instagrammer blogger, soon to be author, ought to be TV host, and founder of the incredibly powerful platform Make Motherhood Diverse. They are Niren and Candice. How are you both? And what a pleasure to have you both in a room with me. It's something we've been talking about for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ages actually. We did it!
Yeah,
we did it. How many kids between us?
Six.
Flipping neck. Too many. As the title of the podcast suggests, this is all about being honest. And to get us all in the mood, I like to start with a quick fire round. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go.
A great meal or great sex?
Great sex.
Sex.
Fame or fortune?
Fortune.
Fortune.
Leave or remain?
Remain.
Remain.
Reincarnation, probable or not a chance?
Probable.
Probable.
Social media, good or bad?
Grabard.
Same. It's a tricky one for me to answer.
I think
same.
You need to remember who employs you.
Yeah, but everything in moderation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Have you ever committed a crime?
Yeah.
I mean, gonna listen? No, we don't need to know the details. Just take it as that.
Yeah,
how about you?
All the time. One that everyone does.
Okay. Leave that to your imagination. Do you believe in a God?
Yes.
Yes.
This comes from an ongoing argument that I have with Ben. Have you ever peed in a swimming pool?
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Ben Telford, yet again, he thinks that nobody does. I tell him that
everyone does. Just don't do a number two.
Yeah, exactly. No one's shitting a pool. But he, like, honestly, this is going to blow his mind. I'm so glad I put that question in. When did you last cry?
This morning.
I didn't cry, but I got really teary thinking about return to paternity.
Biggest regret?
Blowing 40k when I should have bought a house. 50k actually.
Again, the mind boggles about what you spent it on, but
I actually don't know about regrets.
No regrets.
I mean, there's that money thing is something I could have saved for a house when I was way younger, when London wasn't as gentrified, but hey.
Mm. One thing you can't live without?
Oh, my kids, I guess.
You don't feel obliged. I mean, no one.
My phone.
Instagram.
That's the predictable answer, yeah. Kids, but my PlayStation?
No, that's shameful. that's shameful. We've been there on this kind of topic between us before. And your motto, if you have one?
Get money.
Definitely a theme.
If you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Right, does everyone feel a little bit warmed up? You didn't even need warming up. But still, we have. Now we're moving on to a section that I call the big topic. And the big topic that we're going to talk about is race. So tell me about your nationality, your ethnicity, for people who don't know you.
I class myself as Black British, innit? But my grandparents on my mum's side were born in Barbados and my grandparents on my dad's side were born in Jamaica. my grandparents on my mum's side still both live here, but my dad's parents have gone back to Jamaica. Like, that was always the plan, come to England, hustle, and go back to where you came from, so to speak. But I don't speak to my dad's grandparents. They're still alive and my dad's dead. But I am very invested and connected to my Bajan side. Like, I got back from Barbados last week and I would move there in a heartbeat if the money was there. It was like, oh, I'm home. That was that moment.
So I class myself as a British Indian. I will never lose that Indian part. I know the next generation will probably say they're British first. And my cousins did say that. I was like, yo, remember where you came from. My family moved here in the late 60s. My granddad went from India to Singapore. My mum was born there, and then he joined the British Army. We moved to the UK. They had an arranged marriage. My dad came from like a village in Kerala. My dad still to this day hasn't got a British passport because he's so national pride is everything to him. It's like he's Indian swimming through. He's like, you never know when the people might kick us out. I ain't even joking. Like, he's seriously not got a passport for that. My grandma, she's retired. She could have moved back to India, but she think life here is better. It's a question that I've been pondering a lot, is living here better for my family? Because they moved here for a better future.
Yeah. And
do I now move for a better future elsewhere?
Yeah, you posted shared an article someone had written about kind of that flip reverse.
Yeah, reverse migration.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing. And then you've both married people.
Yeah, my husband is Nigerian through and through. Born in Nigeria, came to England with a very I'm the majority attitude, which is I now lean on him in that way. But I'm also teaching him about the hardships his son is going to face, because RJ was born in Britain.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, my husband's name's Bode, a lot of Bode's attitude is going to clash with RJ's. And I'm trying to be like that temper in the middle. Like, dude, you cannot expect our black British children, no matter their heritage, to have the confidence you do, because they see themselves as the minority. And watching him learn about race from my perspective is like watching your child learn to walk.
Really?
It's emotional every day. Like, this morning he woke up enraged about something. And I just giggle because I've been like this my whole life.
Yeah.
But it's like every day a layer of cataract is being peeled off his eye. And he's like, oh my God, was that a microaggression? I am furious. I'm just like, pipe down, dear. Like, you're actually with a veteran. It's cool. But to watch him learn is like, it's blowing my mind.
Naren, your wife, Tin, is...
Filipino. Yeah. Funny story is, I never introduced her to my parents for 3 years. And when they eventually met her, like, oh, she's lovely. And then they met her parents and it's like, oh, we kind of have the same immigrant experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Indians have this thing of staying within their... I think most minorities have this thing of staying within their community. When they meet others, they realize it's like, there is this...
Yeah, crossover.
Crossover story. Mm. She's also a Londoner, born and bred. And we're two born and bred Londoners. It's kind of rare.
Yeah, that you've got...
Especially in the industry that I work in, to say that I was born here is like, what? Because everyone moved in.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you where you both grew up and what that was like.
I grew up in Brixton Hill, bang, bang. I love that place. Like, Brixton, I will always regard Brixton as home. And that road specifically, which is adjacent from Brixton Prison, was just densely populated with Black West Indians. Mm. Like, Windrush, you got dumped in Brixton. Like, that's just what happened. It's changed a lot now, but now my nan is like, she owns a £1 million home that she bought for, what, 17 grand? Just because the time was right and no one wanted to live there. But now to walk down Brixton Hill, a flat white is 750. And I'm just like, but this is the place no one wanted to go. Mm. You wanted to be off the road by 7 p.m. because it was just fueled by this idea of like gang culture.
Mm.
All I understand of Brixton is community. I call it community, but I think now looking back with adult eyes, that was protection. It was like, we've come here as a minority. Mm-hmm. The majority are not going to protect us. This is how we support each other. But I think that's part of the problem with what's going on today. Mm. Like, community is just dismantled.
Yeah.
Everyone like looks out their curtain, but then shuts it back. Oh, that's got nothing to do with me.
I grew up in East Ham.
Mm-hmm.
If you asked me 5 years ago, I probably would tell you Stratford. I was kind of embarrassed of saying I'm from East Ham. But it's Ends. Don't know about Ends. East Ham is probably where white flight took place in the 80s and 90s. When my family moved there, it was like skinhead culture. My uncle used to tell me if on his walk home from school, turn in the wrong corner, you encounter a skinhead and you're likely to get beat up. So they run home. I grew up in a very different East End where it was full of minorities. And it was kind of a safe haven for me. I never felt any kind of racial issue there. Like you, communities, like brown people love to chat. Like walking, I used to go shopping just with my grandma. You see another grandma, so
you're pulling the trolley.
Yeah, oh yeah. I was pulling the trolley. Yeah, and she rewarded me a Milky Bar.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, grew up in East Ham, and I still say East Ham's home, which is funny because I moved out a good few years ago, but I still refer to home as my parents' house over there.
But growing up in those places, when did you first become aware of your colour or your race or that you were a minority? Because actually it sounds like you were both in kind of...
When you think of it like that, I was in a bubble, really.
Yeah.
I don't think I really started to think... This is interesting. Colourism came first. I got to secondary school and realised I wasn't a light-skinned black girl.
Right.
Because that's what was popular. Yeah, it was like, oh, I'm not beautiful because I'm not light-skinned. It was never, I'm not beautiful because I'm not black.
Mm.
Because all the schools I went to were predominantly black anyway. So I didn't feel like a minority in that sense. Race didn't start to creep in, I'd say, until my early 20s. I was an au pair in Napoli that was... Actually, I went to India before Napoli, and both those trips were a guttural shock to my
really?
System. Yeah. Yeah.
In what respect?
In India, it was just this, it was one of two things, like, oh, you're black and disgusting, or it's, you're black, can we stroke your hair?
Mm.
Does your skin come off? Like, does this wash off? And it was just this constant, and they have no concept of personal space in India. Like, Indians in India, they're like, we're going to touch you, we're going to... And I was just like, oh, why?
And how old were you?
19.
Yeah, so really young.
So I was just like, whoo.
And you're on your own?
I went with a trip of volunteers, and there was one other black girl. So that was kind of like my buffer. Like, I wasn't alone, and we always went out together because we felt the difference in being like black tourists to being a white traveller in that space. And then I went to Italy by myself, and Italy was just racist. It was just the N-word every day. It was assuming that you're the cleaner. Like, every time you left the apartment,
like, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. So...
And how did you cope with that?
My dad died. So that... I came back home, and I think I just shelved it. I was like, well, I'm not going to travel like that anymore.
Mm.
But then after dad died, and I tried to make headway in the adult world, it became clear to me that all of the offices where I was the receptionist, everyone of power was white. So that's when I was like, I'm starting to see a pattern here. Was I late in the game, or has social media just made us more woke to these things?
Yeah, it's hard to know.
And so perhaps younger kids just get it a bit earlier. I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the younger generation, cause it's less social, just the internet in general.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the reaction of the Parkland kids to what happened, they stood up.
Yeah.
I think our generation will probably be a lot more passive.
Yeah.
They used what they had to create change and use their voices at such a young age.
Mm.
But yeah, race for me, again, I'm 30 now, so the last 10 years really.
Yeah.
And last 5 years more so to talk about this topic in on a public setting.
Yeah.
And you've got to find your voice. And honestly, like, my parents, if they find out about the stuff I talk about at work, and even on this podcast, they'd be like, what is wrong with you? What? They're paying you well. Why do you want to get fired?
Yeah.
Why do you talk like this? That generation of immigrants, they came here to strive.
Head down, work hard, don't make any fuss.
They'll make noise because you don't want to get fired because we're trying to put bread on the table.
Yeah, so you need to just fit, you know, kind of conform. And
so me having the ability to even use my voice in such a manner is down to their blood, sweat and tears and prayers.
It's interesting that you say about using your voice, because one thing I noted about you when working together, you were very, very quick to call out the fact that you were the only brown person in the room. Like, it was kind of your, you know, it's your default and your one of your opening things on any presentation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And do you think that was a defence mechanism? Do you think that is to make people aware? Where did that come from?
I think a bit of both. In fact, it riles me up if I go into a room now and I'm like, really? This is in 2019, this is your whole agency is just white.
And Candice, you've just talked about, you mentioned at the beginning, but I've watched it on your Instagram like a stalker, but how going to Barbados made you feel really at home and really liberating.
Yeah, going back home, as I call it, like no one followed me around the department store. I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm free to pick up this expensive item. And so I can do that. And a police car rolls by and nothing in me flinches because I'm not just seen as the person that's going to be causing trouble. I've never felt that in my life.
Is that the first time you've been to Barbados?
No, I go every year. But as an adult with kids...
Yeah, you were really aware.
I was very aware.
And do you think that's in contrast to the fact that I'm always drawn to Candice for many reasons, but we've kind of swapped. Candice has moved to a village really, really close to where I grew up, which will be a very white middle-class village. And I now live in Peckham, just down the road from Brixton. But, I mean, that must have been huge, moving out to the country. It's not even the country, is
it? Yeah, but like, it just feels so foreign. I'm just like, my mind is still blown, but I felt like our backs as a family were up against the wall. Especially when I found out RJ was a boy, I was like, we are not doing this. We are not doing this in this climate. I'm not putting my son in the grave early because of knife crime. And it was that made us expedite that move. I was like, we have to go now. He can't even get into the school system in London. I just became very mama bearish about the whole thing. Mm. For some reason with Esme, it didn't bother me as much. But with a boy, I was like, I can see where this is going. And it's so mad. He's not even one yet. And there were 6 stabbings last night in London. Mm. I'm like...
You can feel that.
And I will take... Not that this has happened where we've moved to, but I would take microaggression and slight veiled racism over not putting my kid in the box. There's just no competition, you know?
Do you think the kids... I mean, especially Esme now, who's kind of... is aware when you went to Barbados, was she aware of that kind of sense of liberation, do you think?
Yeah, like she ran around barefoot. She like hugged my great aunt, who she only met when she was one, and she felt like she was home. And she's the only black girl of colour in reception at school, like in the whole of reception. I use the term, it doesn't help, her hair's beautiful, but she's got locks as well. And a girl told her last week, but only straight hair is beautiful.
And I mean, she's in reception, isn't she?
She's 5.
Yeah.
So we're having a lot of that. I've made the decision to put her into private school. Like, and that's me just being mad because I don't have the money to hand. I'm not like Lord Sugar, but I'm just like, listen, you know me, get money, jump out the boat. The money will save us later. It's fine. Like, and everyone, like the reports back have been like, okay, you know, she's going to be even more of a minority at private school, but she'll be a minority in a space where my money gives us a voice.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that?
Yeah. If I go to a state school and I'm like, your education is skewed and you're just not doing it right and my kid feels out of whack, they'll be like, well, we have her from 9 to 3. We tick our box. We don't care. I feel like if I went to the head of a private school with that, it's like, you take my money. You're going to try and make...
You're going to listen to
me. Yeah, basically.
That's really interesting.
Money talks.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about fatherhood for you? Has that changed?
Instantly. And now...
We eased you in, really.
Yeah, no, I was very grateful for what you both share on Instagram. I think I even DM'd you in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, after we did.
Yeah.
So we live in Havering. I grew up in Zone 3, moved a little bit out. I'm still in London, but just being a little bit further out, it's refreshing. Air quality is better, first of all, but... Just seeing the stabbing news on a day-to-day basis and seeing what's going on with Brexit and the rise of austerity, Brexit's just going to increase that.
Yeah.
And it just really worries me where this is all going to go.
Yeah.
We're just going to see more and more crime. Homelessness, if you walk around central London, it's gotten far worse.
Yeah. Parenting definitely shifts something. And actually, Candice, you opened my eyes again to the terrifying statistics about black mothers in childbirth.
Yeah, we're 5 times more likely, black women, to die in childbirth.
I mean...
I'd like take up the tape of your whole podcast.
Yeah,
but
I mean, this is not a quick topic.
But it starts with, honestly, a racial bias within the NHS system. And until we're ready to unpick that, that number's not going to change. Because I almost died after Esme. I got sepsis after Esme. No one believed me. I was told various times, predominantly by white midwives, that I was overreacting, that the pain isn't that bad. By the time I got to hospital, I was 70% septic. And I've seen the data from America, but there is just this natural disbelief of black women's pain. I don't even like to talk about that number unless people are going to be realistic about the fact the problem that black people can't access higher level jobs in the NHS is a part of the problem, because you need to see yourself represented in order to have a dialogue that feels honest, yeah, or like you're being listened to.
That wasn't the next question for me about the workplace and has being a person of colour affected your career for better or worse?
The avenue I've decided to go down, I think it's affected me for the better because it's currently my USP. I don't care who, you know, is like, oh, that's a bit... No, but I made myself one of one because I didn't see myself in a space. Mm. So that currently works in my favour. When I was working in publishing, it was terrible, especially publishing. The nepotism and the old boys club of that infrastructure, it then spills out into the books that this country creates. Yeah. And that's
what
a problem.
People are reading and then it...
Because we get the same stories, we get the same voices, we get the same people being published. And that was really jarring. And I've kind of had to have this attitude of taking the back door my whole life. I'm like, oh, you're not going to let me in the front. I'll build a tunnel underneath. Like, I'm just so used to that attitude. But since coming back from Barbados this time, I'm also like, no, I need to be more vocal about where I'm being shortchanged, mm-hmm. because there's a line of black women behind me who feel exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do I continuously have to give you 150% when my white counterparts can show up and give 25%? And be paid a dollar on my dime.
I was at an internal panel with three black leaders at a company, and one of them answered, I can't wait for the day I can be mediocre.
Yeah.
Straight.
It's not a privilege that we have.
No.
I go into rooms where I'm token, I know I have to represent. I'm not representing just
myself.
Do you feel
that way?
I feel that way. Internally, I'm very, very fortunate and blessed to work at a company that allows me to be an advocate, allows me to use my voice and speak my truth.
Another shout out to F&F Clothing, who've bravely taken the plunge and got on board with this podcast. And from one pun to another, they're making waves by using 100% recycled plastic to make some of their men's swim shorts. In fact, so far, they've saved 2 million plastic bottles from entering the ocean. How good is that?
I know a lot of places where you can't say anything like this. You'll get punished for it. Mm. I'm very thankful to get out of ad agency culture because it is definitely toxic. Just go to a conference now and you'll still see why nothing has changed. It's a boys' club. Yeah. It's still very middle
and it's
class.
It's the same thing. It's perpetuating the problems that we're
and you can't
about.
Become what you can't see.
No.
And I'm thankful that this company has strong women and strong people of colour in high positions.
Yeah.
In fact, if I get hurt by a recruiter, I always ask, if they call me, I'm like, hey, so what's the male-female split like? I don't even ask about race. If they're male, female,
if you're not even getting that
sucks,
right,
then I know the race is nowhere near there.
As bloggers, Niren doesn't consider himself a blogger anymore, but still, but people are either in advertising, bloggers or consumers, how do we think brands are doing?
They're getting better. It doesn't help. And even though I've done it a couple of times in my career, it doesn't help that there's now a fame attached to call out culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's like every other day, oh, you're so terrible. Yeah. You know? That's really jarring because also as just human people, the more you get told you're doing something bad, you just kind of retreat.
Yeah.
The approach has to be different. Like I don't call people out publicly anymore. And if I'm going to hit you up, I'm hitting you up with a strategy, which you will then pay me for. Like I'm like, you got this wrong, but let me help you as your diversity and inclusion officer.
Give yourself a title.
Like, you know.
Get that money.
Like, let me. But this very quick reaction, especially of social media apps, oh, this is so terrible. I don't think that's helpful because what we actually should try to change is who the brands are using to create these ads.
Well, exactly.
Who's in the PR spaces? If that office is completely white, they don't see anything wrong with that. Completely white picture.
The crazy thing is people have outrage on social towards the brand.
Yeah.
Reality is probably the agency that did it.
Yeah.
This cancel culture needs to die. It's just tired.
It's terrible. It is terrible. I agree with that. I think the responsibility just needs to even up a bit. We need to be smarter about our approach to telling them you could have done this better. And then everyone, the minority or the majority, and I'm doing quotation marks for people, need to get better at making space for people. I am not going to take this job because there are 5 white people doing this. Here's the details of someone you should fill that slot with.
Yeah. That's an ally.
There.
That's allyship right there.
And as the minority... I'm now having to learn that I have to tell people I cannot be the only black mum you have on your books. Mm. Here's my Rolodex. Cut me 20%, pay her more than me. Like, we have to get into that space. Mm-hmm. If not, the position of power is never going to change. The flow of money is always going to run the same way. Mm. And I can't sit here and genuinely believe there's enough to go round. Like, there's enough for me to go to Chanel every week, but then be like, oh, don't give her a job. Now, Bunda, we just need to get better at that.
What does a seat at the table look like?
Yeah, exactly.
I think the worst example in the last God knows how many years is Pepsi, which was a shambles. And when you look at that piece of work and then you look at the agency that did it, it was an internal agency. Everyone was Caucasian. No one from a minority background. Nothing was written with any form of truth to it. If you had a brown person write their character or a black person write their character...
You sit here and you go, how is that not really obvious, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get truthful now. As a white person who is living in constant fear of getting it wrong, first of all, language, getting that wrong. I had to ask Simon how to say it. BAME, well, she said you can say BAME or B-A-M-E.
Yeah,
she said you can say either, so that's good. And person of colour. But is it actually wrong in itself that I invited you here to talk about race?
I don't think that's wrong at all.
Because is it that I'm putting you back in a box when obviously I know that I want to talk to both of you about 100 other things as well?
You pick two people that are happy to talk about it.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't feel like I've been put in a box. I'm happy to use my voice to pay it forward and make change.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm thankful that you opened up this space to create this discourse. I wish more people had discussions like this.
Yeah.
I think that will change the climate we're in. Mm. Right now, we just react to things as opposed to, hey, you have a differing opinion.
Yeah.
Let me understand why you have that differing opinion.
Yeah.
Let's learn from each other. Yeah. How do you feel?
I don't understand the fake outrage. If I want change as a black person, I've said this, I've used this analogy before. How will we get change if we just huddle together and talk amongst ourselves? It's like sitting at that one table again where the shitty KFC is. Like, go where the quinoa is, go where the right avocado is. Like, move your chair and make space. Because then, especially in the black community, a lot of what happens is, oh, you're selling out.
Yeah,
oh, you're being an Uncle Tom. All of these things. And it's like, no, sweetie, I want to go where the good stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what good means to me. That might not be what good means to you, but I want to go where I see people having fun in their jobs and making money. Like, my parents did all the sweating and all that blood stuff, and I don't understand. Sometimes I think certain people in minority cultures get so used to struggle that they subconsciously don't choose the path of least resistance.
Mm.
And I had a complete, maybe even a year ago, something clicked in my mind where I was like, life doesn't always have to be hard.
No, allow yourself to.
Allow yourself to flow. Allow yourself to accomplish, to get what you want. Even if that means you need to leave your comfort zone. So I have to get up from this table where all these black people are speaking and go to this table where I might be one of one. Mm-hmm. But that won't be forever.
No.
It might be for 5 years. It might even be for 10. But sooner or later, other people at this other table are going to be like, "Rah, she's eating really well."
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I lose my culture or my spirit. That's something I'm going to bring to your table. Like, I'm going to bring jerk chicken to your table.
Down with that.
So I used to fight with the same thing on being a coconut
growing
up. I rebranded coconut to Kinder Surprise because Kinder Surprise tastes better. But that was just because I had different interests.
Mm.
I went to art school. I was into Photoshop and
trainers,
not just hip hop.
Yeah.
Mm.
And now, like, I remember when I changed my style a little bit, came
I mean, you've changed a few times.
And my dad would run around the house trying to lift up my jeans, and he would say sometimes, "Be more Indian."
Mm-hmm.
Like, why can't you be like so and so's son? So and so's thing's got 8 stars, wants to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a doctor. I've now paved my career in something different, but that is something that we face within our community of these like boxes they put you into.
Yeah.
And now having a beautiful mixed race baby.
Yeah.
I don't want her to be put. She can be anything she likes.
Yeah.
Maybe an engineer because they get paid, but.
Yeah, you wait. I'll give you a little bit of time until she starts arguing with you. And like, even when she starts saying she doesn't want to wear what you want to wear. You know, Bertie's really big into football kit at the moment. It's not what I imagined, but we've got to go for it. Yeah. But yeah, it's true. You can be whatever you want.
In fact, like when I told my parents about Tin, their reaction was, "What about traditions, values, and cultures?"
Wow.
And I was like, but that makes no sense. Because you've raised me as a British Indian. If you wanted me to marry an Indian, why did you come here? Well, yeah. Going back to the village. Secondly, my kid is going to have two traditions, two values, two cultures, and she's also British.
Yeah.
That's just rich in culture.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weird that they're kind of wanting to limit you.
But I completely understand why they hold on to that, because that is the last remaining thing they have to hold on when they left her.
I guess the overarching question is what do you want for your kids and how do you want things to look for them?
In an ideal world, just perfection and happiness, but a sense of freedom, like the sense of, even if it's false, freedom and confidence that Bode has. My kids have to get that.
Yeah.
And Esme has it. And I, even if I now have to fork out financially for her to just keep that vibe, she's like, I'm the best. I'm great. And I'm just like, yeah, this juice. Like,
don't let it, yeah.
I can't. Oh, I just don't want people drinking that. Because to restore it on a black girl now is like so hard. And a black boy, I don't know much about yet because he's only one, but I guess even harder. So I'm just like, I'm constantly pulling from Bode, like, yeah, you're the best. Because they have to learn that from him, because I struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm learning along with them. Like, as she says, I'm like, yeah, I'm the best too. Woo! So it's just like...
That's so good though, isn't it?
Yeah. I need you to have that energy, because those characteristics break down race.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're in the whitest ad agency, if a black Nigerian man comes in that room, you crumble. All those white people, you will softly bow your head just because his confidence is all encompassing. Mm. And in that moment, you're like, wow, I don't even feel like this is someone who is beneath me. Like, this person is so rich in spirit, you can't be broken. And that's what I want for them, I think, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful answer.
Yeah, what about you?
So, I don't know, like, words of affirmation wasn't really a thing in my household.
Yeah.
We didn't even hug.
No.
It's just a cultural difference. Words of affirmation mean a lot to us, like building each other up, being mindful of the words that we use and speak in the household. I never realized this growing up, but it was only when I was 21, 22, realized my parents' strict curfew of my dad. My mom used to say, get home before your dad, or he'd be pissed off. It was get home so you don't end up in a gang. I still see those kids. Like, I go back to ends and I still see the same people from my class hanging about in street corners.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What different paths you've trodden?
Completely different paths. But the only difference was they were allowed to hang out outside. I was not allowed at all.
God, I remember people used to knock for me to play out, and my granddad would be like, if you ring that door, like, my granddad would tear into them. And I'm like, but they're my friends and I want to play. And it just, like, there was a gate at the front of their house, and he used to make me play with people through the
gate. That's not great for your street cred.
He was just like, it's not happening.
That was
it's
me in like, the garden, you play over the fences.
But then how do you navigate that? Like, obviously we're in a different culture, we're at a time when kids unfortunately probably can't play out in the same way, but
now I'm really grateful to it for that.
Yeah.
And I'd like to live in a place where my daughter doesn't have to go through that.
Yeah.
And I think the same way we have foresight about actually how much worse, especially London's going to get before it gets better, is the same way they had foresight about what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, yeah, in 10 years, those friends are perhaps not going to be this way.
Yeah.
And I don't want you thinking that that's okay.
I love this city.
Yeah.
Me too.
But I just spent a month in Asia, and coming back was hard. For the first time I felt, why am I coming back to this dull
gray? Did you really? And you're a bit like you.
I love seasons. I love layering up in the autumn and winter, but after 30 days in the sun, my skin was glistening. Naraya was like, she's got a little bit of dry patch in her arm. None of that was there. She slept every night with that, like all night. And then in like Singapore, we didn't feel like minorities at all. Not that in London it's a vibrant place, but it was refreshing to be the majority for a change.
Yeah.
And that just felt nice. You don't the same thing of going to a shop and not worrying about someone following you around.
Yeah, like.
And also, there's a bit of a privilege there, like being the foreigner in your. They look at you like you're royalty.
Yeah, like
all right, that was.
Hello, mom, sir.
Yeah.
They got down to the actual truth of it there, guys.
There's a whole different thing. Like, there's an incident in Singapore, sorry, I'm going off topic, where we were checking into a hotel, and Singapore's notorious for helpers, and they're usually Filipino. So this older white dude walks by and looks at Tin and Naraya, and then looks at me. He's like, is that your baby? He's like, yeah. Oh, she's so cute. And then only 2 hours later, we realized he thought Tin was a helper.
Yeah. So
How does she feel about that? I'm glad you're laughing. I don't think I'd find that very funny. I grew that child, yeah. Anyhow, I could talk to you two forever, but I always like to try and broaden it out and ask the good people of Instagram. So I asked them, first of all, how you would describe your ethnicity. 70% of my followers are white British, which is kind of interesting. A lot of people describe themselves as Cornish, which I quite like.
Wow. First time I've heard that.
A couple of people who I assumed were one thing proved that they were another, and one person DM'd me about how difficult it is for her that she is white presenting, even though she's mixed race, and that is a real struggle, and that she doesn't ever feel equipped to be able to talk about it because she appears white. Some people took offence to me even asking them, which is interesting because it's an open-ended question. No one needs to opt in. Then I asked them to finish this sentence. Race is divisive and uniting, a social construct, complex and not understood. Not complex, stop overthinking it. Something I wish I was more comfortable about talking about. Something I wish didn't matter. A barrier, we are all just people. Should be irrelevant, but sadly isn't. More than about colour, pointless, the word shouldn't exist, we are just human. Something to be celebrated, immaterial, ever-present, loaded. Should be seen as beautiful variations of equal standing. Mm. Then I asked people if they feel comfortable talking about race. 39% said no, and I asked them why. I've started paying more attention to race and becoming more aware of white privilege. I don't want to get it wrong. I don't know if it's okay to say black or brown. I fear being disrespectful. As a white person, I don't want to sound like I get it when I know that really I don't. I struggle keeping up with the right terminology and fear that I'm doing the equivalent of racial mansplaining.
Wow.
I thought there should be a good word for that.
Race is such a multi-layered issue. Like, there's anti-blackness, as you mentioned, in the Indian community.
Yeah.
And I call it out all the time.
Yeah.
And that's
it's actually a massive, like, in fact, spending time in Asia just now, there's whitening products everywhere, and it's your big P&Gs and Unilever's that produce that stuff.
Yeah.
That's modern day colonialization empire thinking.
Yeah.
It's the remnants of the empire globally that has resulted in so much racism and issues that we just haven't dealt with. This should be taught in schools.
And there's racism then within race.
Yeah.
My grandparents were horrified that I was with a Nigerian man.
Yeah.
They were like, oh my God, we do not do that. Like, it was just unthinkable. Although walking down the street, you cannot tell the difference between body and I.
And then in Indian culture, there's caste issues.
Yeah.
You marry our caste.
And then people are messaging me about, as a whole different topic, of cultural appropriation. Like, should I feel guilty that I've bought my kids a teepee?
Oh my God.
And then they're like, do you realise that Aladdin is actually really Islamophobic, as in the Disney movie? I was like, oh, don't take Disney. There's always a scale, isn't it? And the only way with all of this is we can try and talk about it.
Yeah.
In a non-confrontational way. This is a problem that, you know, we all love social media, but it's so heated and keyboard warriors.
What I hate about social media is you cannot hear a tone.
No.
Tone of voice is so important.
Yeah.
You would think I'm spitting bars to you, like, if I'm typing in what you would then read in an angry voice, but you cannot decipher tone. Like, and I think that whereas social media is great in that regard, it's like you could get it so wrong or how someone's treating you.
And it just spirals. And the problem is then people jump on the conversation and they skew the tone of voice.
There's a famous question, where are you from? And to ask that to a black or brown person,
it's really loaded.
But it really depends on the tone of the delivery.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind when someone asks that, and it completely depends on the way they ask it.
Yeah.
But if they're asking in a way like, you don't belong,
you're
like, get out, I'm a Londoner.
So, the bit before the end, and I've loved speaking to you both, it's always polite to ask, have you got anything you want to promote or shout about?
My podcast, Pillow Talk, with my husband, Hilarious. The IG live is at 9 p.m. on Saturdays. I've got a book coming out shortly, Swipe Up on All My Things, Double Tap on All My Ads, because I need my money.
That's a quick pitch.
Damn, I don't have a blog or anything. Follow me on Instagram at Niran. NIRAN.
Keep it simple.
Send me free nappies.
I love that.
And then last but not least, going back to the name of the podcast, which is Honestly, who do you wish you could have an honest conversation with, and what would you say? It could be a celebrity, someone who died, a friend, a younger version of yourself.
Honestly, right now, I'd love Theresa May in the room.
Whoa,
I wasn't expecting that.
You know why? Because she was a Remainer and now she is pushing this, like, awful deal.
It's a good answer.
Yeah, I'd love to know how she feels, because it's completely against what she stood for 3 years ago. Like, to go against what you stood for, that must hurt.
Yeah, what have you done?
But then she also paved the way for this rhetoric of anti-immigrant culture right now that's thriving across the world. Populism. Her speech last week was, sorry, I don't want to get into Brexit.
Yeah. Sure, as a Theresa May.
Just sip my water.
Just any one of these kids caught up in gang culture, I guess. I'm so obsessed with those statistics and those stories. It would be not nice, but it'd be really interesting to try and dismantle them in a space where they don't feel like they have to prove anything to anyone. Because I just cannot get my head around what is a bloodbath happening in London. And it's mad because maybe because you guys still somewhat live here, I'm like, is it even reported to you in a way that it is to people that now live outside London? Because as someone born and raised in Brixton, I come into Euston Station and I'm on my guard. I'm nervous.
Really?
Yeah, every day.
And I think this we've become desensitized.
Only when you go on holiday, actually, and you come back and I'm like, oh, like,
yeah,
in places that don't bother me.
It's the same way homelessness in California is such a huge issue, but you see it so often, you're just like...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably a good place to end. I've been Clemmie Telford, they've been Niren and Candice, and this has been Honestly. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates about it. Thank you very much. If you've had a giggle or a light bulb moment of reflection, or better still, both, then it's thanks in part to our partners, F&F Clothing at Tesco's. It's because of their support on this podcast we were able to have these frank, open, and honest chats. Thanks, guys. I've been Clemmie Telford and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for joining me in getting frank and getting open. We've hit that part, the shameless plug, but at least I'm being honest, right? That's the name of the game. So please do share your thoughts and reviews, tell your mates all about it. And better still, why not press the big subscribe button? That way you'll get weekly doses of unadulterated honesty from me, Clemmie Telford. Thanks very much.